Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast partner of Scotland Grows magazine, where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, publisher of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home for £6 a month. Sign up today at nts.org.uk/roots and use the code GROWS24 to receive an extra packet of seeds in your first delivery. In today's episode, I chat with the absolutely inspiring Janice Klein. Janice is a qualified food scientist, gut health guru, supporter of plant-based, locally sourced, seasonal food, a fermentista and a foraging fanatic. Janice has written in Scotland Grows magazine about foraging for and using wild garlic, ground elder, rose hips, sea buckthorn and nettles. She is passionate about inspiring and motivating change in health and eating habits, and delivers vibrant good health advice through her skills, expertise and experience in her wellness hub. I hope in today's episode you are as inspired as I am to go out and see what's there in nature's larder and use it to make better choices for the things that we eat. Janice, I'm delighted to welcome you to the Scotland Grows Show and very excited to chat to you today, although I'm a tad worried because when you had me speak to your Facebook group last year, we were supposed to speak for half an hour and we were still chatting an hour and a half later.
Yeah, that's usually a common problem when I'm involved talking about anything that I'm passionate about. So you just have to tell me to shut up, your time's up.
Well, as we said in the intro, you are just passionate about a plant-based diet and all the goodness that you can harness from all of these herbs and veggies. So let's start by talking a wee bit about why you're so passionate about a plant-based diet.
Well, for me, I'm all about gut health, and gut health is all about fibre. You only get fibre from plants, and fibre is fuel for our trillions of wee beneficial gut bacteria who work on our behalf doing all sorts of things. They reduce inflammation, they create vitamins for us, they support our immune system, they produce neurotransmitters. So they really do all sorts of stuff. So having your own wee sort of inner like pharmacy, if you like, all these wee guys doing different things, but they can't do it without a food source. And a food source for gut microbes is fibre. But it's not just one type of fibre. It's about diversity of fibre. So it's all the different plants, all the different colours, the herbs, you know, the greens, the veggies, the root veggies, it's all of it. So you only get fibre from plants, and that's why I'm absolutely passionate about them. Plus, I love plants. I love to eat plants, even though I feel a bit guilty sometimes. But
you are very, very good at doing lots of things with your veg, like fermenting it. So what are the best things that you can do with veg to help your gut?
Well, here's the thing, as you say, I mean, a lot of people either just boil them to death or eat them plain. That isn't a great idea because a lot of the components in veggies, a lot of the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamins A, D, E and K, you only absorb them in the presence of oil. So I don't eat plain, boring food. Life is too short, to be honest. So if I'm having, I tend to go for whatever I'm having, even if it's veggies, I make a lovely dressing to put on it, usually use a quality oil, a nice vinegar, some turmeric, black pepper, fermented garlic, and then you're upping the health benefits and you're upping the flavour and you're upping the amount of the beneficial stuff that your body can absorb. So, as I said, I don't eat food that's boring because I'm a massive foodie. I'm one of these people that loves to eat. If I'm not eating, I'm planning what I'm eating next. I'm a massive forager. I love foraging because foraging is just, that's the way that we evolved to live, was to live on what nature provided for us. So I'm a massive fan of that. And you've got so many plants out there, so many diverse plants, all with slightly different polyphenols, slightly different benefits for our health, and they are all incredible.
So what are your favourite things to forage for?
Oh, well, That's a very good question. Wild garlic, I have to say, is one of my absolute favourites because there's so much you can do with it. And you mentioned the fact that I also love to ferment things, but foraging and fermenting is a match made in heaven because you can forage stuff, you can harness it when it's best for you. You can harness all the benefits. If you ferment it, you then preserve it indefinitely, and all of those benefits are enhanced because what you do when you ferment anything is all the microbes on the veggies start to increase and they start to produce acid, which makes ferments sour and gives them incredible flavour. But then they're also teeming with these wee tough guy lactobacillus bacteria. And these are the foods that we need to be getting back into your diet on a regular basis. And it's really not hard to do it when you start to look around you and see all the amazing plants that are out there. So yeah, wild garlic is a favourite, but I also love nettles, dandelions, ground elder, which grows in my garden, which everybody else hates. I absolutely love it. My mantra is in the garden, if you can't beat them, eat them. So I eat all the weeds because I used to be like everyone else and think, oh, look, I have to get rid of all the wild stuff. What I have done now is I have left my garden. There's bits in my garden that I just leave, you know, to just be wild. And the number of plants that I've now got in the garden that I can eat, and they just grow. Because, you know, another thing is when you're growing stuff, try get the conditions right. But a lot of the wild stuff just does well just being left alone. So you don't have to do anything with it. It is food for free, and it's food that has incredible benefits for health. I mean, nettles, again, are one of my absolute favourite plants. Nettles come up in the spring. They're kind of coming up now. After a winter when most people have been overeating, after the festive season, everyone's sluggish, your lymph isn't moving, you come into the lighter months, the dandelions and the nettles start to come up, and these are incredible to just shift our energy, to lighten our energy.
Let's unpick a couple of them. So everybody, I would imagine, knows what a nettle looks like, very commonly grown. What would you do with nettles then in the springtime?
Well, that's a very good question as well. What I do with nettles is I love to pick them in the spring and make them into tea, nettle tea. The nettle tea is a massively detoxifying tea. Most people go to the shops and buy it in a box, in a tea bag, when in actual fact, nettles grow everywhere. And as you quite rightly say, everyone knows jaggy nettles. They grow everywhere in the jaggy. And this is the other thing when you're foraging for plants, you need to make sure you know exactly what you're collecting. But everyone knows nettles. So nettles, I make them into teas. I make a nettle pesto. I'm a massive fan of making pestos with all sorts of different green plants for the diversity. Pile in lots of different ones. A quality oil, usually an extra virgin olive oil, incredible benefits for our health. Look at the Mediterranean diet, and you know they use a lot of extra virgin olive oil, eat olives, you know, so we need to take on board some of these things too. And then what I do with pestos is any combination of nuts and seeds, other absolute superfoods for health. So you can blend the nettles up. I make a nettle and lemon cake, the most incredibly intense green colour. So there's lots of different ways to harness them, and also dry. I'm a massive fan of drying, especially in the spring. That's when they have the most benefits for our health from the leaves. But the other incredible thing about nettles is the leaves are best in the spring, but you get into the autumn months and the nettle seeds are also absolutely incredible. And if anything, they are more powerful than the leaves. They are like nature's amphetamines. They give you a massive energy boost. They support the adrenal glands. And I sprinkle them in everything. I mean, I had for my breakfast this morning, I had my sourdough with avocado, poached egg, nettle seeds and seaweed flakes. Another fantastic thing in Scotland, with a side of sauerkraut, of course, because I don't eat anything unless there's something fermented on.
Those nettle seeds you would have harvested in autumn time, dried them, and you're still using them now?
Yeah, absolutely. I made the mistake 1 year I didn't gather enough. So this year I was out gathering many, many nettle seeds. But again, they grow everywhere. They are so abundant. And if people would just open their eyes when they go for a walk and be a wee bit mindful, you just see things everywhere. Mm-hmm. Another one of my favourite herbs, as I'll just mention, is called Herb Robert. And yeah. I had never seen Herb Robert until my lovely foraging friend, Vicky of the Little Forager's Kitchen, had pointed it out to me. And I thought, oh, it's like, to me, it's like a Scottish coriander. It's like a cross between coriander and parsley. It's very aromatic. It's actually known in America as Stinky Bob because they don't like the smell of it. But I think it smells wonderful. And when Vicky showed it to me, I thought, oh, I love that. So I'm going to start incorporating that into my pestos and my soups and putting it in my salad. And then the day after she'd showed it to me, I saw it in three different locations when I went for a walk because I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't looking for it. But when it was brought to my attention, I started to be a bit more observant and I found it growing absolutely everywhere. I've also now got some in my garden.
Oh, handy, very handy. So if people were going out to pick nettles in the springtime now, would you recommend they just pick the top bit off, the fresh new growth?
Yes, that's always the best thing to do. Obviously, they are jaggy. So what I do is I tend to take my foraging basket, usually have a pair of gloves, and just get a pair of scissors and just snip the top off. Then when you come back, you can either just have them fresh. If you want to make a fresh nettle tea, absolutely fantastic for you. But what I do is I do like to harness them when they're at their best. So I gather loads of them. I have a dehydrator, so I just dry them. You don't need a dehydrator, but you can just dry them off in a windowsill or until they're crumbly dry. This is the thing, if you want to preserve anything, if you store anything and there's any trace of moisture in it, what will happen is you'll get mold on it. So you need to make sure if you're drying anything out, you can just put the nettle tops on some newspaper and just leave them to dry. Leave them in a single layer and just turn them over a few times until they're totally dry.
Store them in a jar.
In a jar, any glass jar. I've got a very nice selection of glass jars and I've got a very cool label maker for my Christmas from my girls, one of these old-fashioned ones. So I've been having fantastic fun labelling all my jars. I haven't finished yet. I've only done half of them, but I have so many.
So at this time of year, from February onwards, people could be out, could be starting to pick nettles. And then what about dandelions? I mean, dandelions, we call them weeds, but they were revered years ago as being a wonderful plant. Dandelions are more nutritious than most vegetables, aren't they? They contain more vitamin A than spinach and more vitamin C than tomatoes. But we want to pull dandelions out of our lawns.
And do you know the wonderful thing about dandelions is you can use every single part of it. The flowers, I personally love dandelion flowers. I make tempura with it, and you wouldn't think that that would be delicious. And oh my goodness, it is totally delicious. You just pick the great big dandelions. I make a sauerkraut with dandelion flowers and mustard seeds and white cabbage. That is a wonderful, wonderful sauerkraut. It tastes amazing. I dry out the dandelions as well, and you can add them through salad dressings, you can add them to mayonnaise, you just give a beautiful bright sunny yellow colour. And apparently there's more than 200 different types of dandelions and they're all edible.
Right down to the roots, because the roots were used as a coffee substitute during the Second World War.
What I don't do, because it is very messy and it's a bit dirty, and obviously you harvest the roots in the autumn when it's starting to get a bit cold, so that's a bit muddy and dirty. But I have tried dandelion coffee. It's lovely. Again, the leaves are great. They are massively detoxifying, and the reason for that is that they're actually really bitter, and it's bitter foods that support our liver function. And these days with our modern diet, that is the one thing that most people don't eat any of. People tend to eat sweet and salty and they don't do sour and bitter, and that's where the benefits for health are. Having said that, you can put dandelion leaves in your salad, but they are really bitter, so that's a bit of an acquired taste. What I tend to do with dandelions is I will put them in, again, a pesto, but with other greens. The other thing that's coming up in my garden at the moment is three-cornered leeks. Now, they're usually up a bit before wild garlic. I mean, they are invasive, but they're actually really tasty. So what I do, mine are coming up just now, so I've been out sort of snipping some off, adding them to my soups, using them as a garnish, because again, they grow everywhere. And they actually do say, if you see them, actually dig them up, because they are invasive and they're crowding out some of our more delicate of native plants. But again, as I've said, I'll go back to my wee thing, my wee motto is, if you can't beat them, eat them. So, you know, to sort of think, oh, I have to go and dig all them up, that's actually a really good food source. And again, to go back to that diversity, if you're eating wild food, then you're going to get way more benefit for your gut health than you're going to get from going and buying a bag of spinach out of the supermarket that's probably been sprayed with pesticides. And the other plant this actually comes up to is sorrel. Mm-hmm. Sorrel is a wonderful plant. I mean, you can get cultivated types of sorrel, but there's lots of wild sorrel, and sorrel has a wonderful lemony flavour. It is absolutely delicious. I make a lovely sorrel and butter bean soup, which is really good. And again, so, so good for our immune system, for our liver health, for our body's detoxification systems. The other one I have is that little red veined sorrel, which actually is a bit of a menace because it spreads absolutely everywhere. And the leaves are also bitter, but they're quite tough. But I do find that the small leaves are actually really nice. They're delicious and they look lovely if you want to just use them as a little garnish. And they're coming up just now as well. So even though I don't like the bigger version of the leaves, I do like the little ones. So I just harvest the little leaves and they just spread everywhere. That again is the joy of weeds. You cut them down, they just grow back up again. And that is why it's good to eat them, because if you eat them, it gives you that resilience, the same resilience that the weeds have. As I said, because what you do is you cut them down and they just grow back up. And it's the same as us. If you look at our immune system, if, you know, something like you get, you know, a virus, you catch a virus, I think a lot of people are totally floored by it. But if you have that resilience in your gut microbiome, you bounce back. Yeah. You're not floored by it. And that's the whole point of it. And that's where, again, I think growing your own is such a good idea, because you're growing stuff, you're not spraying it with chemicals, and you can go and harvest it as and when you want to eat it. So things are not lying about in supermarkets in plastic bags, and they just don't have the same benefits for health.
So at a time of year when people are getting out now, thinking about their garden coming alive again for the summertime, people want to dig up and get rid of weeds, but your motto is no, harvest them, eat them.
And you can dig them up if you like, but don't throw them away. Absolutely eat them. It's honestly, I can't tell you the connection that you feel to nature when you do that. You just feel as if you are connected. Your body, our body, we evolved with plants. You know, weeds are actually have medicinal benefits. Our bodies, we evolved with plants and using plants to be well and to keep us well. We have receptor sites in a lot of our cells for a lot of the compounds that you get in wild plants that you don't get in cultivated ones.
And there's an old saying, isn't there, that a weed is just a plant in the wrong place. We have to change our mindset, change our focus about looking at these plants and looking at, as you say, the benefits that they can bring.
Absolutely. The other plant that is a common weed that everyone knows is rosebay willow herb, which you see it growing absolutely everywhere. It's the first one that ever comes up in any bomb sites during the Second World War. It was the first plant that came up on those bomb sites. And it actually makes the most fantastic tea. You can ferment the leaves, you can eat the flowers. And when you look at it, it's actually a lovely plant. It's got a lovely pink flower. But as you say, who's decided that that is a weed? Same with dandelions. I look at dandelions and I think that's actually a beautiful flower. Why is that considered a weed, and why do people keep trying to dig it up? But the thing, as I said, is with the weeds, they're very persistent. They just come back. So you may as well just harvest them and then wait until they come back up again. Then you have a continual food supply in your own garden. They might not just be growing where you want them to grow if you've got a garden that's all organised and pristine, which is absolutely not what my garden is. But anyway.
And if you're not eating them, you're leaving them for pollinators to eat, particularly things like dandelions, which quite often are a very, very early food source.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. And again, just to get back to that, the way that things should be, to get back to having a balanced ecosystem in our garden. And I talk about having an balanced ecosystem in the gut. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. So if we go back to how we used to eat when we did eat seasonal food, look and see what's around, what's growing, and make benefit of that. And again, with nature, you look at in the autumn, all the berries are there. They all support your immune system coming into the winter because they're all high in vitamin C and they all have different polyphenols and different compounds that support our immunity moving forwards into the colder months.
And one that you mentioned earlier as well was the dreaded ground elder. So people dread having ground elder in their garden. But you shared a recipe with us in Scotland Grows magazine for ground elder soup.
You know, that is one of my favourite plants. And it sounds a silly thing to say because I know how people hate it. And I have to admit, it does spread like mad. But If you get those little leaves when they're just coming up, they are absolutely delicious. They're fantastic in a salad, as part of a salad. And you want to get them when they are quite small. As they get bigger, then they're not as nice. But if you get them when they're small, and the thing is, because they grow all over the place, you can always go and harvest them. That's one of my great ingredients for my spring pestos as well. So I do ground elder, nettles, sorrel, dandelion, whatever else that I can find that is green that is edible. And it makes you think about things in a totally different way because you're actually making use of it and it's growing. And again, it's another incredible food source to add to that gut diversity that you don't have to do anything to grow because it just grows by itself. As again, I'll say maybe in the wrong place if it's growing in between all your beds. But in my garden, I've got a bit at the back, which is just for wild stuff. And I harvest all the wild stuff and I like to look and see what actually just grows. And I just make use of it as long as I've identified that it is in fact edible and it's not something that's going to poison me or whatever.
Poisonous, yeah. So tell us a wee bit more then about your garden.
Oh, my garden's very interesting. It's not a classic garden by any stretch of the imagination. I have a massive rockery that goes right along the garden. And I've got a pond, I've got raised beds at the top. It's not ideal for growing because I've got a lot of trees. It's quite overlooked, so it's not particularly open. But I do have three raised beds at the top and I've got a wild bit at the back. So what I tend to do is I grow things like kale and rainbow chard. Love growing herbs, I grow salad-y type things, and these are all the things that I eat year-round that are difficult to buy organic in the shops, and these are all the things that work for me because I can go and harvest them one or two leaves at a time. I don't have to dig the whole plant up, and they also just tend to look after themselves, which is wonderful. And I do have ferns everywhere in the garden. I've got all sorts. I did have the beech grove garden actually twice to my garden, so I'm very fortunate they did come and help me with my rockery issue because I do have a degree in agricultural chemistry, so I knew quite a bit about soil. But I moved to this house and there was a massive rockery with literally nothing in it apart from lichen and moss and one rhododendron bush that had grown out of the rock. So that was really interesting to get the Beech Grove garden to come and to put plants in that now that are still there, you know, tiny little trees that are now really big. And it's just a garden that has evolved. I used to have chickens at the back. My last wee chicken died about 4 years ago. So now I have a meditation hut in the garden. I've just got my wood burning sauna around the side of the garden where my old polytunnel used to be. And it wasn't in the right position. And that was just disappointing because I would plant stuff and it didn't do particularly well because the position wasn't right and I knew that. But what I do is I make use of all the herbs. I love herbs and I use herbs a lot. So I have a herb garden and I'm out and I pick herbs all the time and I absolutely love growing herbs.
And it was really important, I think, what you said about growing things where you can just go out and pick one or two leaves at a time. Sometimes there's this belief that to grow your own produce means you're then harvesting gluts of it because everything's ready at the same time. But pick wisely if you're not going to eat that much of it and you can pick as you go.
Or you can ferment it because there's the other thing that's wonderful. And again, that traditionally is what people did to preserve food was to ferment it. If you did have a glut of something or you go back, you know, 100 years ago, people didn't have freezers or anything else. So you had to grow what you ate. So you had to find a way to preserve it. When you ferment something, you have those probiotic bacteria and it's pre-digested and you get all sorts of benefits from it. So that to me, again, is just a match made in heaven. But again, I think if you are growing, and it is quite funny because my neighbour next door used to have a wee greenhouse and he'd grow tomatoes and I'd say, oh, your tomatoes look lovely. Have you tried them? And he said, no, actually, I don't like tomatoes. It's like, well, why are you growing them then? It's like I like to grow the things that I know that I'm going to use, you know, chili plants and just things that, you know, you can just pick bits here and there. Because again, as we know, gardening can become a totally full-time thing. And if you have a lot of plants that need a lot of looking after, you know, then it's a wonderful hobby if you have the time, but you have to try and fit it into the time that you have and still enjoy it. But without thinking, oh, you know, I have to do this or I have to do that.
Your neighbour was obviously growing tomatoes just for the sheer enjoyment of the growing process then and all the kind of mental well-being benefits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And did you used to get lots of tomatoes then when they were ready because he didn't eat them?
Yes, indeed, yes. I used to stand looking longingly at the tomatoes till they didn't.
So you've told us a wee bit about your garden, Janice, but what if you were to start all over again and you could only have three plants in your garden? Now, I would assume, knowing you, that they would have to be edible. Which three plants would you have and why would you choose those three?
That's a very, very hard question. I did have to think very long and hard about that. And I have to say, okay, one, I have many favourite plants, but I'd say I love lavender. I absolutely love lavender as a plant. I love the fact that when the flowers come up, the bees love it. It smells incredible. And for me, gardening is not just about what things look like, it's what they smell like. And lavender, I just love it. I add it to my kombucha, I use it, I pick it, I bring it in, and it just smells incredible. And there's so many different types of lavender. I went once on holiday to a beautiful wee cottage down in Northumberland. And they had literally, they had a lovely wee seating area outside and they had almost like a hedge of lavender. And I used to love going out in the morning with my coffee and you could just sit and the number of bees that were buzzing about and the smell from it was just incredible. So I do love lavender. I do realise, okay, it sometimes is a bit damp and a bit wet here and it doesn't do so well. But I usually have lavender in tubs because I just love it. It's such a beautiful plant. And it just is that uplifting because it's just so, you know, reminiscent of summer days. And as I said, that buzzing and the connection with the bees and nature. So I do love lavender. So that would have to be one. Another one I do absolutely love is nasturtiums. The reason for that, you get them in all so many amazing colours, all beautiful colours. You get variegated ones, you get plain ones, you can trail them, you can have them growing up the way, down the way. You can eat the leaves, you can eat the flowers, you can pick all the seeds. They self-seed everywhere. And the other incredible thing about nasturtiums is, again, with my fermenting hat on, is big nasturtium leaves are actually antimicrobial. So they're incredible for using as a little lid to top your ferments in the summer. So if you grow nasturtiums, then you've got another thing that's fantastic for fermenting.
Would you use those leaves in a salad or would you always make them into pesto?
No, I do both. And you can use the flowers in pesto as well. They're actually quite spicy. And they look absolutely beautiful. I did do 1 year because 1 year I did have quite big nasturtium leaves and I thought I'd be very fancy. So I used the nasturtium leaf as a plate and then I made all this lovely little selection of things and I thought that's quite cool because you can just eat the plate. So they had no washing up. So I thought that ticks all the boxes. And the other thing is they literally grow anywhere. You don't have to do anything. And they're so bright and vibrant and beautiful. So yeah, so I do love them. The third one, again, that's a really, really hard one in the garden. I was thinking more of a flower this time rather than a something that you can eat. I actually do absolutely love helibos. I have a gorgeous one in the garden and it's the most beautiful flower. I could look at it for hours. It is gorgeous. And it comes up at a time where other things are not flowering. It's kind of flowering now, which is lovely. And I do think that's the lovely thing about garden is it's that, again, seasonality where, you know, there's always something lovely to look at. So I would have lavender in the summer because that's gorgeous then. I would have something nice in the spring. And again, as I said, I couldn't decide between that. And I also do love azaleas because I have many of them planted in the rockery. They do really well here because they like acidic soil and the colours are just beautiful. And again, it's that kind of heralding the spring, isn't it? When you get the plants that sort of flower first. I know the bulbs all come up first. Bulbs are a bit more hard work, so I don't tend to do a lot of bulbs, even though I do love them, but I don't actually have any in my garden.
Yeah, but even choosing plants like that gives you that succession. So the hellebores go into the azaleas and then they go into the lavender and the nasturtiums can go right through till October.
Yeah, I know. That's what I love. And again, that's the thing. It's plants that earn their place. And there are plants that, okay, that we might love and think they are absolutely beautiful, but they're high maintenance and they need very specific conditions, you know, and that's the thing. And I've tried a few things that haven't really worked particularly well. But anyway, I did have a kiwi once and I thought that was a bit silly because it's just not hot enough here. But never mind, that didn't work.
Well, we can always dream. But you make a very good point there about choosing things in your garden for which you have the time to maintain them. If you're going to choose something that's a diva and it's going to need lots of, like tomatoes, they need lots of attention to help them along, and you don't have the time to do that, you end up disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know the thing is, though, I have tried growing quite a few things, and my husband, he's not a gardener at all, and he'll say, oh, that's so disappointing, you know, that that didn't work, or the slugs are eating this. And I said, well, do you know what? I've still had the best fun growing things, planting them, watching them grow. And that's just part of gardening. You're continually fighting against nature, whether it's the weather, it's the slugs, it's the moths, it's the caterpillars. But again, the way that I look at it is, you know, that, you know, there's some, it's to share the garden with the wee critters that happen to be around. Sometimes it is very annoying if your kale crop gets eaten by the, what is that, cabbage white butterfly. I hate that. Anyway, but the thing is, I still eat all the leaves, even if they have got holes in them or something's been eating them, because I think, well, that just shows that if insects will eat them, because insects won't eat things that are sprayed with pesticides. So I don't really care if there's a few odd holes or whatever. It doesn't negatively impact the nutritious value that that plant has. But that's another thing that I think an awful lot of people are looking for, perfection. You don't tend to get that when you grow things yourself. But to me, that's the beauty of growing things. They're all unique. You know, and they all have value. It doesn't matter necessarily unless you're a prize begonia grower and you're growing things and they have to have exacting standards. What I love is the variety that we get in nature. You know, and when you look around, it's astonishing. And you don't see plants trying to outdo one another, or wee birds, you know, trying to sing, oh, that bird's got a better song than me, I'd rather sing that song. Everyone just is in their own, doing the best they can with what they've been given. And it's just very interesting. I just love being out in the garden. So much to learn. There really is.
And I think, as you say, when you actually start growing your own, that's when you learn that maybe these things are quite artificially manipulated when we buy them from supermarkets, because growing your own shows you true shapes, true colours, true textures.
Yeah, and the taste, that's the thing, because it tastes totally different. And as I said, my first degree, I'm in food science, you know, so I worked in food science for a long time. And I know that when you manipulate something, you genetically change something so that it looks better or it looks bigger, you're going to lose out on the flavour and the nutritional value. That's without question. But people buy with their eyes. I always go for all the wonky ones. I like the wonky veg. And that's, I think, what we need to get away from. It's that having maybe too high expectations. When you start gardening and you get the seed packets and you look at them and you're like, oh, that'll be amazing because I'm going to have that. And it doesn't always work out that way, as we know.
I was going to ask you, Janice, to finish with your best piece of gardening advice for gardeners and anyone looking to start it. But I don't think I need to, because I think you've just given an absolute plethora of advice throughout our whole podcast chat, given all of your experience from what you actually physically do and all of your background training. I think there is so much there for people listening to this episode to take away.
I would add one thing. If you are going to do, start small. Just start small. You know, do one tub, plant up some herbs, some different things, and have one lovely focal point to look at. Because I used to look at people when it came to the summer and planting out their gardens in a wee line. You know, one here, then one 12 inches later, then another one. I always think, again, a lot of gardeners agree that there's more value in having a small area packed out with beautiful plants. And I said that classic combination of lobelia, alyssum and marigolds is really three plants that I really don't like. And maybe that's because of that, because I've seen so many people that just plant the same thing year in, year out in exactly the same way. And to me, a garden should be something that is visually appealing, that it smells nice, and you can use, if you can also eat it, then that's, you've ticked all the boxes, in my opinion. You know, and you have to work with what you have. Some things work, some things don't, but it's all learning and it's all fun. It's the taking part in the doing it, because you're out in the fresh air, you've got your hands in the dirt, that's really brilliant for your gut microbiome. So I think there's a lot of analogies between a garden and a gut.
What a great way to finish, Janice. That's a very nice analogy.
It's always time well spent in the garden, because you'll always benefit from it. Whether or not your plants are beautiful and can win prizes or not, it doesn't matter.
So if people want to find out a wee bit more about harvesting all of these plants that you've talked about that you can go and forage and how to use them, as well as finding you inside Scotland's Grows magazine, how else can people find you then to find out a wee bit more?
Well, I'm on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Be Nourished by Nature. I have a Facebook page, which is Nourished by Nature UK. I have a wellness hub in which I actually share a lot more stuff, but it's a membership group. You have to join it. And I have a separate Facebook group associated with my wellness hub. But the wellness hub is just a combination of fermenting, foraging, growing, research, recipes, natural living, all sorts of different things, all in the one place. So there's various ways, but I'd say I also have a YouTube channel called Janice.NourishedByNature. What I do, and I'm not saying that what I do works for everyone, but mine is based in scientific research over the last 12 years. And I'm massively connected to nature. That's Nourished by Nature. You can't, you know, that says it all, really, to be honest.
And it's good, and I'm glad we brought this conversation to the podcast and to our listeners, because Scotland Grows has always been a big advocate of growing your own produce, but it's really good for people to know what else you can do with that produce. And for those who are not yet at the stage of being able to grow their own, or just haven't found the time to do it yet, to know that you don't have to grow your own. You can actually benefit from nature's larder. You can look at what's out there and what you can forage and start small.
Absolutely. And again, it makes you look at your garden in a different way. If you suddenly go out and instead of thinking, oh my goodness, it's all weeds, you start to think, oh, well, wait a minute. I can eat that. I can ferment that. I can add that to my salad. I can put that in my smoothie. I can add that to your pesto. And then it becomes quite wonderful because you don't have to do anything. And the wild plants just grow. And that's the thing. And you almost feel as if they're there saying, look, here I am. I'm here to help you. Would you please pay me some attention? You know, and that's a wonderful thing, because you just start to feel incredible once you start to eat, you know, in a way that actually does sustain our health. As I said, I feel younger the older I get. And it's because of the knowledge that honestly, I don't have any health problems. I'm in my 60s now and I feel better now than I did when I was 30. You know, and you can age well, you can age badly. It's a choice, the same as everything else is.
You're a great advocate, Janice, of walking your own walk and talking your own talk. So it's wonderful. And thank you so much for being a guest today on the Scotland Grows Show. I'm sure there is so much here for people to listen to. This will be an episode that's played back many times.
Well, excellent. Well, I hope so. It's always an absolute joy to chat to you as well. And I'm so looking forward to gardening season getting going, because I've got a lot of plans this year as well. But not massive big plans, small plans, doable plans. So, yeah, that's what I'll be moving forwards with.
Good. Well, best of luck with it, Janice. And I hope to catch up with you again soon.
Fantastic. Thanks a million. Bye.
Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram or LinkedIn, and sign up for our mailing list at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows Magazine 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for this episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Roots subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.